Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I've got a great show lined up for you today. And, you know, it's cool when you've got guests that are really good and they come back. That's even better. So Thomas Corley, he's on the line with me, president of Seraphis & Company. And he's also the CEO of Rich Habits Institute and an author. He's written books. And he's been on our program before talking about them. The Rich Habits, the Daily Success Habits of Wealthy Individuals. And I've read the book myself and it's really good. And Tom's website is richhabits.net. And he's got a new book out, How to Raise Our Children to Be Happy and Successful in Life. And having three children myself, I, of course, would love for that to be their life experience. So, Tom, welcome back and help me raise those kids.
Hey, David, I'd be happy to. I'm trying to do the same with mine.
I love having you on the program because, you know, you're just so real and practical. And just a little more extended introduction of Tom to get it right here. He's not just been doing the author work here of late, but he's got a master's in taxation. He's a CPA and a certified financial planner. Gotta love those guys, CPA, CFP. That's a heck of a combination.
Oh, well, thanks. It took a lot of time. A lot of years to get all those licenses. It wasn't easy, but you know, it's worth it because it makes you better when you try and stretch yourself. You know.
Yeah. Well, I can relate. I know how difficult those two are. So Tom is a president of Seraphis & Company. CPA is one of the top financial firms in New Jersey, and he's been on radio, television, featured in numerous print and internet publications. He's sought after. In fact, this is really cool. Listen to this: international media attention for Tom has resulted in media publication over 20 countries. I haven't gotten out of one country yet. That's pretty cool, 20 countries.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened. You know, next thing I know, my publicist is calling me and say, hey, we're in India.
Cool.
Hey, we're in Asia.
That's neat.
And I'm like, well, how the heck does that happen? You know, they just pick up on certain things that I write or certain interviews like we're doing today, David.
Yeah, that's excellent. Well, I'll have to get in touch with your publicist. Maybe they can get some of our books out to a larger audience. I don't mind if it's translated to another language. Because financial stuff, what do they say? It supersedes or transcends any language. Everybody needs to know and understand better about finances. And of course, that's why Tom's on the program. So let's dive right in. Any new takes or thoughts before we get into the kids? Anything of late? Because I know you do ongoing research and study of looking at how the wealthier or rich people live their lives. And you've done a lot of research to write your book. You found patterns. And we went through this on our last interview with you, Tom, that you found patterns of some consistent habits. Any new revelations that you've seen since we talked last about some of the things you're seeing trending?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm doing a couple of different things. One is every summer, at least twice a year, and summer is one time during the year, where I go back over my research. I usually bring somebody in, like an attempt to help me go through the research as a result of a lot of the interviews I come up with some different categories I want to track, and we added about another 45 or 46 categories, different activities that separate the rich from the poor just from the research, a lot of them are pretty cool. In fact, the BBC just did a piece on that they were interested in the different recreational activities and sports activities of the wealthy, which I have in my data because I track just about everything they did. And, you know, also one of the things that kept popping up in a lot of my interviews was finding your main purpose in life. So I went back to my research and I found that it was interesting. There's really two types of success that I realize now from my research. And it's the individuals who find their main purpose in life, David, they represented 7% of the wealthy people in my research, and 93% indicated that they hadn't found their main purpose in life. And what does that mean? It means that the individuals who found their main purpose in life, there was a direct correlation to the amount of wealth that they had. In fact, they were the ones with the most wealth.
Interesting.
The other 93% who had not found what I guess, you know, I call the main purpose, the thing that you do that doesn't feel like work, they represented 93%. So there's really two types of successful people out there, though. And that's something new and interesting that I uncovered in my research.
That's excellent. Well, I'm really glad to hear your continued research, and I'm actually really glad to hear that actual research finding, because I know you feel this way. I can tell in the work that you do and the passion you have for this subject. I feel like I've got that. I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, and it's not work. I get up every morning. I love coming to work or coming to the office. I'm not going to say coming to work, coming to the office where I can meet with people and help them figure out what to do with their money. And it's so interesting to do that kind of work because everybody's different, and I am always solving puzzles. In fact, when I get home to spend time with the kids, they've got a 5,000-piece puzzle on the floor, and they're like, "Dad, help us with this." And I'm like, no, I've already worked on puzzles all day long, so you guys do that one. But it's a lot of fun, and it's a real joy when you're doing what you love.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting because there are a lot of experts out there who are motivational speakers and motivational authors. They write a lot about this success, and you know, Jack Canfield, Jim Rome, John Maxwell. But what I'm really uncovering is that when you find your main purpose, it really is the thing that it creates passion, but that passion creates motivation, and then it also creates willpower. They're like two sides of the same coin, motivation and willpower.
Yeah.
When you lack passion or you haven't found your main purpose in life, and what you're doing something for a living that you don't like, you don't have the motivation and you lose your willpower. So they're kind of conjoined. They're joined at the hip. So that's why finding something that you really love to do, it creates that motivation and gives you the energy, the willpower that you need to do the things that you should do that you don't want to do.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. I love it. So let's do this, Tom. Let's grab a quick break. We come back. We'll then start working or drilling down a little bit on some of the things that we can do to raise children to be happy and successful in life. Of course, that's the book, Rich Kids, How to Raise Our Children to Be Happy and Successful in Life. And the website is richhabits.net. Thomas Corley on the line. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back with Thomas Corley, CPA, CFP, Masters in Tax, author, good guy, and we're glad to have him on the program because he's authored books that are very relevant and interesting. Rich Habits, The Daily Success Habits of Wealthy Individuals. Very interesting read. I've referred to it multiple times, Tom. I really like it. And I want to get into the new book and talk about some of the techniques that we can employ, whether we are wealthy or not, right, to raise kids to be happy and successful in life.
Yeah, that's right. Whether you're wealthy or not, it's not important when you're a parent to be wealthy to teach your kids success habits. In fact, 80% of the wealthy come from the middle class and the poor group. You know, the thing about that, David, is that is always this renewal of wealth. And so, you know, wealth is not something that's generational. It repeats itself from one generation to the next. Contrary to what everybody believes, it's actually something entirely different. Your parents can instill in you certain habits that will give you the ability to become successful in life.
Did you find in your research, again, I know you're a researcher and you're not just, you know, pontificating and throwing these ideas out there, that a lot of what you're doing is based on research, Tom. And in looking at this, do you find a correlation in how kids turn out with how hard or how much the parents push them, how much they require them to you know, to do chores, to do tasks, to, you know, to hold them accountable in different ways? Do you see a correlation between how parents, how hard they encourage their kids to work, how strict they are, how much, you know, how much responsibility they're given, they have chores, you know, things like that? How does that impact helping kids, raising them to be happy, that those areas of responsibility, creating boundaries for them, those things, how much of an impact, and how do we apply that?
Yeah, there's no question there's a direct correlation between actually stepping up to the plate above and beyond just being a parent and moving into the zone of a mentor. There's a big difference between being a parent mentor and just being a parent. The parents who raise children who become successful in life, they are mentors to their kids. They're teaching them discipline. They're teaching them good habits. They're teaching them how to be responsible with money when they get to that age, which is usually around the age of 14, when they start accumulating money from mowing lawns or doing whatever they do, babysitting. So it's at that point where the parents need to step up as a mentor and say, okay, here's what you're going to do with the money, and here's how we're going to save it, and here's what how you're going to spend it. Because if they're left to their own resources, the kids will do whatever they want with the money. They need guidance every step of the way, and Rich Kids is really about that. It's about parents stepping up their game and becoming more than just parents who raise kids to be adults. You're raising, I like to say parents raise children, raise adults, and mentors raise millionaires. And there's a lot of truth to that. I saw it in my research. The individuals in my study who were wealthy, whether or not their parents were rich, they were taught these success principles, these rich habits. And they the parents had just stepped up their game, and these kids were the beneficiaries of it.
So the parents' wealth, let me say it this way, if the way the parent mentored the child was just as important, if not more important, to the child becoming wealthy and being successful themselves.
Yes, and there's a cause and effect there. I like to say it's more cause and effect than correlation, because when you teach your kids some of these habits, like the self-education habit, 88% of the wealthy were taught this by their parents to read every day, 30 minutes or more, something for self-education above and beyond school. They were in their face, wanted to... In fact, it was a great book, Ben Carson, who, from what I understand, he's going to run for president. He's the black neurosurgeon who rose from the ghettos of Detroit. Very great, interesting story, David. His mother saw, you know, the environment that they were in, and she said, I don't want my kids to grow up and become part of the gangs and things like that that were prevalent in Detroit. So she made their kids, she had two boys, Ben and his brother, she made them read every day, and at the end of the day, they had to hand her a report on what they read and what they learned. And they did this for years. And Ben Carson talks about it in his book that he did not know until many years later that his mother could not read. So every time they handed her a report and she was looking it over, she couldn't read it.
Wow.
But she got them into the habit of doing that. And as Ben Carson says in his book, One Nation, he says, I didn't like reading in the beginning, but my mother made me do it. And after a while, I said, well, if I'm going to have to read, I want to read stuff that interests me. And he started reading about successful people. And then the light bulb went off in his head. He said, you know, I can be successful. I mean, a lot of these people came from nothing. And they rose up, what's his name? Andrew Carnegie, the steel magnate that became U.S. Steel. He was... Scottish. They emigrated to the U.S. They were poor as anything. And he rose up and became one of the wealthiest men in the world. So anybody can become wealthy in America. It's just, you know, your circumstances don't dictate. The circumstances that you're born into and you are raised in don't dictate your future life. What does dictate your future life, what does dictate your future circumstances are the habits and the principles and the skills that you pick up, the strategies that your parents teach you, the success strategies, they change your circumstances in life. So your circumstances are temporary, made permanent by your habits and your behaviors and your choices.
That's pretty clear, Tom. That's very good. Excellent way of putting it. And I want to come back to one more thing that you mentioned. Well, there's a couple. I had homework before and after school, and then I had whatever the teachers gave me as well. So both my parents are educators. But I want to go back to one of the things you mentioned, and I was going to ask about it, so you gave me a nice segue. I was going to ask you about my son is turning 13, and we have a lawn service, and I want to either scale back or change maybe that, or maybe, you know, change what the lawn service does. And I want to create an opportunity for my son to do what I did as a kid, which is to mow the yard. And, you know, we'll get a lawnmower, the push, old fashioned push lawnmower. It could be self propelled, but he's got to at least walk behind it. And I think that's a good idea. And I think it'd be healthy for him. What do you think?
Well, I think it's great to teach your kids responsibilities. you know, when your kids are young, if they don't have any chores or responsibilities on their to-do list, then they never create a to-do list. They never have a to-do list to look at. The teaching your kids something like that at an early age, 13 is a great age, and then also giving them some incentive, such as compensation in the form of $10-$20 allowance or something like that, in exchange for them fulfilling their responsibilities at home, they learn that there's that if I do X, then Y happens, and Y
right,
is money.
Right.
So it teaches them early on a work ethic, and then the second part of that is where the parent needs to step in and say, okay, you just made $20 this week from doing your chores. We're putting 10 of that into a savings account. We're going to build that up. And then when that gets to a certain point, you and I are going to sit down and we're going to invest that money in some way, shape, or form. And the other thing that the savings does, too, is it can create for them a budget to save for different goals. Like if they want to buy a cell phone. Parents nowadays, they don't think twice about getting their kids an iPhone. Well, iPhones, they can cost $200, $300. That means that the kids don't have really any appreciation for the value of the iPhone. They really don't. But if they saved up, if they were forced to save up, and if, in fact, they had to contribute, say, half of the money, they would appreciate it more. They would probably take care of their iPhone a little bit better. So it's when you create, instill in your kids this notion that they have to be responsible not only with their savings, but with also their spending, because they're spending their own money on certain things, they'll look at those things a little bit differently, and there'll be a little bit more value associated with them.
That makes sense to me. Thomas Corley, ladies and gentlemen, president of Seraphis & Company, CEO of Rich Habits Institute, author of two books, and first one I've read, it's excellent. I'm looking forward to getting a copy of reading the one about kids, How to Raise Our Children to Be Happy and Successful in Life. Rich Kids, that's the name of the book, and Rich Habits, The Daily Success of Habits of Wealthy Individuals, richhabits.net. Quick break, we're right back.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. Thomas Corley on the line with us, ladies and gentlemen. You know why Tom's a guest on the show now, because he knows his stuff and he's got great insights. The book is Rich Kids, How to Raise Our Children to Be Happy and Successful in Life, richhabits.net. So I like the idea of creating kind of a plan for taking the incentives that the children get, the compensation. I was thinking of, you know, cash money, and then I'll also include health, dental, and vision insurance as well.
Yeah,
because he's already on the plan, right?
In New Jersey, David, you have no choice. I think under Obamacare, you have no choice as well. So.
Well, they're covered now, and you know what? My son, actually, he wears contacts already. His vision is as bad as mine, and so I think we're a half a point difference. He's not far from wearing my contacts, but I like the idea, and I like the idea of what you said about, you know, kind of creating a savings plan. And I was thinking in my mind, you tell me what you think of this. I was thinking of, we start out with some, you know, little cash savings, and then we go down to the bank, open up a savings account, and, you know, get so we actually can see and experience, you know, the institution. And I love the idea of creating the investment account. I can set up an UPMA. I can set up a, you know, custodial account for him, and we can sit down and talk. Even though he'll probably be a scientist, he's not going to probably be the financial planner, but he can at least understand, you know, the investing, because he hears me talk about it, and he can start out with a, you know, a no-load fund from Vanguard or something like that, and where the minimum purchase price is very low, and he can actually get a statement with his name on it, and I think that would be get him pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I like the idea of creating a Roth IRA, because if you're going to pay him some cash compensation, he can put, you know this as well as I do, that you can put as much away into your Roth IRA as you earn. And over, you know, it's not a lot of money in year one or year two, but after a couple of years, it builds up. And what I like about it is, and I have my son doing this, is, okay, now you've got a self-directed Roth IRA, and now let's talk about how to invest it. And this is where it gets fun. You could start to engage your children, even at a young age, to start looking at different stocks to buy or different mutual funds. And then, you know, when they see that it appreciates and makes money, it piques their interest, and they say, wow, you know, I didn't have to work for that 20% return. It just happened. And so that light bulb, when it goes off, it gets the kids thinking, well, I want to save more because then I can earn more. So it's kind of that incentive. You've got to have some type of motivational incentive that gets the kids interested in not only saving money, but investing the money that they save.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And the other category, which I'll ask your thoughts on this as well, Tom, the other category, I was thinking savings and investing, and then there needs to be a category where I say, hey, look, you can spend money, you know, and we kind of come up with some percentages for each of these. And I think that's important, too, that he can see, and the younger ones, too, there's two more behind him, that they can see that when you do save and invest, then you can also spend, and it's all part of the process. And then the fourth category, which I think is also very, very important, is to give him the option, not going to make him, but give him the option and get him to put his own money in the offering plate at church, and he can put in a little bit of what he makes, and he can feel good about that coming out of his own pocket.
Yeah, I think tithing is a good practice to teach kids. It does a couple of things. One is it teaches the kids the importance of charity, and it also creates a feeling inside your kids that you're doing good.
Yes.
So there's the effect of making that tithing to the church every week gives you that feel-good feeling. And you know that money's going to go and help some people, and probably in the community, the very people that you're surrounded by. So I like that idea. The tithing, I think, is a big deal. I don't know how much is enough. You know, a lot of individuals seem to think 10%. That's a lot of money for a kid. But you know, it's baby step. Maybe start them out at 5%.
Yeah.
And just make sure that they just get into the habit of giving back, because they're blessed with so much.
Yeah, and the thing that I think is an opportunity is to get, and my kids, of course, could do this for you now, Tom. You ask them different, they can explain to you the difference between charity and taxes, okay? So they already understand that, but it gets them into a mindset where, you know, it's not an accident, I think, that charity and choice both start with CH. You know, I want to instill in them, it's a choice. It's not an obligation. It's not some of these things that sometimes people, I don't agree that sometimes people characterize it that way. I want to present it to them as an opportunity, and they can feel fulfilled and feel good about what they're doing. But, you know, they will feel good about themselves, as you said before.
And I think it also, that's a great point. I think the other thing that it helps them get their heads around is the idea that we need to give. Not just money in tithing, but also of our services, helping in the community. But this goes to the idea of the importance of mentoring. The mentors, when you find a mentor in life, it's somebody who's giving their knowledge. They're giving away information to you. They're giving all the time. So when you get your kids in the habit of giving, whether it's money or services or helping other individuals who are behind them. I did this with my son when I uncovered this in my research. He was, I think he was a junior, just starting out his junior year in college back in 2009. I said, hey, you know what? You've got to start mentoring and giving to the underclassmen in your, he was part of the board of programmers at Providence College. I said, start mentoring them and giving to them and teaching them and helping them, because you just never know. Well, what happened, David, was 2 years later when he graduated, he was looking for a job.
Mm.
And one of the individuals who we mentored in the BOP, the Board of Programmers, who we mentored when the kid was starting out as a freshman, was his father was the number three guy at a big financial concern in New York City.
Yeah.
And when my son Brendan was looking for a job, he reached out to everyone he had mentored, and this one kid said, "Hey, you know, I just called my dad. He said send your resume. Here's his email address." And next thing, 4 months later, Brendan was working for this company.
Wow.
So, you know, when you give, it opens up the door to opportunities that you can't see down the road. You just can't visualize. So you just have to get your kids in the habit of giving, because it will benefit them in some way, shape, or form down the road.
Yeah, and you know, and they don't. You don't want them to be closed off. You know, it's also a way for them to be engaged in the world around. They're taking that money and they're giving it to someone else. It engages them into and hooks them into their local community, and I think it creates a lot of awareness as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. We had all of our kids volunteer at a local business that sold food and bakery products and things like that. And at the end of the day, you know, they manufactured their own bakery product, their bread, and so forth. And at the end of the day, they would give it away to the food kitchen, the local food kitchen. And so our kids would volunteer and load the trucks at the end of the day. And they knew exactly where that food was going in our community. It was going, you know, because it was a physical establishment. It was a bricks and mortar place. And they also volunteered at that place.
That's excellent.
So they, you know, getting your kids involved in the community, giving, makes, it does open up the world to them. It opens up their eyes. What they start to see, David, is they start to appreciate what they have, because they see so many people that have so much less.
Yeah.
And that actually creates a motivation for them to continue to try and better themselves, because they don't want to be in that situation that these people are in. And more often than not, they're uneducated, they're laborers, and they don't get paid a lot of money, and if they get a job. And so they get to see that firsthand, and they can make a decision, hey, I don't want my life to be like this, so I've got to work doubly hard, and keep trying, keep educating myself. It all kind of rolls together, you know.
You got it, Tom. Thomas Corley, ladies and gentlemen, Rich Kids, How to Raise Our Children to Be Happy and Successful in Life, richhabits.net. Tom, thanks for being on the program. We'll have you back again.
I appreciate it, David. Thanks for having me on again.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.